I've just realised I didn't mention the third mark of conditioned existence, which is, of course, dukkha, or unsatisfactoriness. And, of course, that happens because we don't manage to live in harmony with insubstantiality and impermanence. And sometimes there's nothing up with conditioned existence, really. Conditioned existence is just conditioned existence, you know. It's not out to get us. However, because we don't easily live in harmony with those truths, it does feel sometimes like it is out to get us. We don't get what we want and we get what we don't want. Or we do get what we want and then we're terrified that we'll lose it anyway. You know, or we get what we want and actually it wasn't what we wanted. Or we get what we want and we discover that us getting what we wanted meant that somebody else has not got what they wanted. We come together in, as well as a great web of life and beauty and wonder, we do come together in a web of unsatisfactoriness. Joined in the hip by unsatisfactoriness. So that's where dukkha comes in, if you like. That's where suffering comes in. That's where unsatisfactoriness comes in. You know, you read these things about Buddhism, and certainly, you know, when I first came across Buddhism, I'm an avid reader. I read everything that I could get my hands on, and, you know, the first flush of whatever, and didn't understand lots of it, but got right into it, you know. Irritated everybody, all the older members that I could come across by asking them questions. Right, to Sangha, actually, when you said... actually, it wasn't like that, was it? It was like, when you said... Anyway, what was I going to say? Yeah, so then you read things and it says, well, you know, the first truth of Buddhism is that life is suffering. And you say, oh, God, no, give a break. Don't mean much of that, you know. And I suppose it takes a while to kind of really come into relationship with that and see that it's only suffering because we don't actually really live in life. Because we're constantly trying to fix it in some kind of way and hold on to it and pull it towards us to kind of shore up that real wee insecure kind of feeling that we have. Push away everything that threatens it, drag in everything that shores it up. So, of course, how can we but suffer? How can we not, you know? We really do cause the conditions for our own suffering. So in a way, the more as we do realise that, in fact, the kind of response, if we can really come to that, and this is where metta is so important, you know, loving kindness, a real robust sense of care and love and kind of kindness is so important. Because I think if we come across this, you know, and we have a little bit of a sense of shunyata, we realise that life in reality is not quite what we thought it was, it can be very kind of challenging. And I think if we can come at it, if you like, with a full heart, a heart full of metta, then the natural response to that is, in fact, compassion. Compassion for ourselves, what fools we are. Compassion for other beings as we see them again and again and again creating the conditions for their own suffering. As we see ourselves again and again and again, seemingly not learning from life's hard knocks. So we've moved into, if you like, the more volitional, emotional component of interconnectedness. As we really see, as we really get in touch and have that feeling of being in connection with other beings, it's almost as though our heart opens to not only the joy and the beauty of that truth, but also opens to that truth that we don't usually experience our interconnectedness. We feel the absence. We feel the separateness. And the response to that, if we're really in touch with metta, is compassion. So I wanted to very briefly say...
Can you repeat the last two sentences?
Probably not. Shouldn't think so. It was something about compassion.
Absence,
yeah, makes the heart grow fonder. And then that, there is probably a teaching. So, yeah. So interconnectedness, from interconnectedness arises compassion, is what I said.